Well, I remember in the old Prodigy days, their chat rooms consisted of mainly bulletin boards. You would make a comment. It wasn't real time. You know, a few minutes later, your comment would appear on the list, and somebody else then would respond to that. So there, it wasn't real time chatting, at least back when I was on Prodigy.
I think that's right in the early days, and then it became more real time. So anyway, the two founders of OnLive actually were internet darlings, so to speak. They were at Novell, I believe, which is a big networking system, and they created a startup company that did as good as a startup company could do, which means it did well and got bought by a much bigger company. Does anybody know what that one was? You'd have to actually do some research for that one. That was Soft PC, I guess it was called. So they actually made an emulator for Apple where you could get DOS, I guess, on it. They sold that to somebody and made a lot of money. So then OnLive was their second thing, so they were able to get a lot of money. So they were going to lay their own cable like kind of AOL did, and they would go to Entel TV because it was more like a new version of TV. They didn't even really know that they were going to use a computer-based system. And they thought, what's better than chat rooms, not like 3D chat rooms? So that's around when I was invited down to go check them out. And they were going to do full-body avatars. You were going to be able to do shopping, chatting. They were working with the Hollywood industry. In fact, they hired a CEO who was from Hollywood. They were talking to the games company. So you were supposed to, in 1994, go on as a full 3D character on their kind of system, be able to shop, play games, and everything else. And I went there and I said, well, that's impossible. And I wouldn't, and you guys are going to die in 6 months, and thanks a lot. And I showed him my face technology, which I still have, and I said, that's that. So I'm giving you kind of a personal story. And I left them. And Dave Collins called me up 6 months later, and he said, you should come down again. And I said, well, why should I come down again? I don't really think they have it. It just doesn't make sense to me. They want to do everything. They said, well, they don't want to do everything anymore. They're going to concentrate just on chat rather than shopping and gaming and everything else. And we've decided to not do bodies and only do faces. And they're interested in your face technology as a way of doing that. So why don't you come back down? So I did, and all of a sudden it made a lot more sense to me. And they are such good people. Most of the programmers from original OnLive were from Apple, and that includes David Collins, and most of them were on the System 7 operating system, which was the kind of the known operating system that made Apple what it is today. So this was quite early on. So right around this time, Real Networks came out and Netscape came out, and for the first time the company had to say, you know, maybe we could do this on the internet. And the company was very worried because if you did it on the internet, it looked like we wouldn't get the speeds that we would get if we would do it all on our own, like AOL was. So that was a real problem. So that was another reason they had to kind of pare down. So how many people in the room actually make spaces?
Well, I do.
Shout it out.
I
made one.
Max made space. We have some users in the other rooms that have made spaces. Kiddos over there. Thrillas over there. Stars over there. I think Oz has made some spaces. So yeah, we have quite a few space designers here. Thrillas,
so let me ask you,
the space that you're in right now.
Oh, great. So let me ask you, what is the considered reasonable polygon count of a space these days.
I'm not really sure. I usually design based on usually file size, you know, frame rate, you know, all these other things come into effect, and it all seems to work itself out in the wash. You know, as you increase polygons, you increase file size, you lower frame rate. So, you know, you just test, and it comes out to where they're all so interrelated.
It's definitely.
So go ahead.
I was going to say, it's definitely something that's watched as you're building a space, the polygon count, and high polygon. You're always trying to go for low poly and different techniques that you're using to keep that file size down.
So I don't know what the number is, but I just let you know, in the early days, the design staff was limited to 300 polygons, no textures. So it was very hard to build anything that looked very good at all. So one of the first places ever was, does anyone have a guess?
Utopia?
Stonehenge?
Utopia was not. Stonehenge was one of, it's hard to say which is the one because we had several, but basically Stonehenge was the first space. The first thing I did when I got there is kind of fix up Stonehenge a little bit and make it a little bit more Stonehenge-y. So that was one of the first places anyway, or at least one of the first places that's still around. The Utopia Aztec space was the first kind of design sense of, we need to start thinking about what a portal looks like, and that's where we were more as a design team at that. But in the early days, it was quite tricky. We were very limited. So I wanted to give you a sense of the kind of the early days. We actually on live at one point had 70 people working for it. So that's quite a big company. They were pretty elaborate in the early days where, they paid for your lunches and they had a fully stocked kitchen with munchies and cold cuts and if you stayed late, frozen dinners. So I wasn't around for all of that, but I was around for some of it.
So a lot of people gained some weight, huh?
Yes, but they also worked very, very hard. They really believed in it. And we had a server team and a client team and a design team. So I ran the design team. Dave Collins kind of ran the client team, and we had someone else who ran the server team. In my opinion, the server team is always a little bit weak, and to give them some credit, it's very hard to make a server back then. They didn't know what they were doing. So, you know, a lot of the early story, we decided to use the internet. We did a number of other things. I want to talk about some other things. So I'm gonna flash forward to an interesting event, which is at some point the marketing staff was starting to get disillusioned that they couldn't make money at Traveler. In fact, many of them had trouble understanding all the things the design team was talking about. So the design team kind of, with Dave Collins and some of the programmers, really spearheaded what Traveler was. And some of the OnLive business people were just slightly more interested in how they're going to keep this thing going, and they really didn't understand. So it was a lot of us going to these conferences and really meeting all the people from the other worlds, Bruce Gamer, Active Worlds. There was a world called Black Sun. There was a world called Oz. And really doing this kind of stuff. And I was able to hire producers. What I wanted to hire, though, was sociologists and people who kind of really understood what Traveler was about. Now, I have to admit, as a designer, I was quite tough on what I wanted Traveler to be and what I didn't want it to be. I didn't want to see anything but head avatars. I was against any type of text chat whatsoever. So I eventually relinquished and said, you could have pitched that only to get things going, but I didn't want to end up in a world where people weren't talking. I wanted always to be talking, not you went to a world and there was silence because everybody was secretly messaging everyone. Now, I know I kind of go over the top with some of that, but I really wanted to get a certain thing going. So at one point, though, I literally had to fire my design staff because they decided that talker, not traveler, which is now, what is the name of talker? Now you guys know more than I do. Talkspace.
Talkspace.
Yeah. Correct. That was something somebody kind of put together on a weekend, and they said, hey, you know, we're not making money yet. We need to pare down. Don't you think talking on a page is just as exciting as talking in a world? Of course, they didn't really understand Traveler. And I told them to their face that Talker will be an immediate flop, that people don't want to stand around one page and talk. Traveler has never, ever, ever, ever been about topic chat. In fact, I was forced in the early days to make a sports world and a computer world. And you've probably seen some of these, and you know how used they are. They're just not used because Traveler is not about chat. It has never been about chat. It is about hanging out. It's about hanging out with your friends, not about going to see people you don't know and talking about one topic. It just doesn't work like that. So with that in mind, they thought Talker could work like that, that you'd go to a wine page and talk about wine. So in order, was away at a virtual reality conference, we were doing more and more interesting experimentation. So this is one of the first times, and Bruce Gamer and I have done this many times since, that I was really physically there at this virtual reality conference, and Bruce Gamer was going to show up as a TV screen in Traveler that I control. So I'm sure you guys have done this all the time now. In fact, this very conference is everyone doing that. But at that conference, even though the online marketing people promised me everything was okay, they literally, while I was at that conference, came up, basically told everybody that they were fired in the design staff, and they went on to be Talker. Well, anyway, to cut this short, Talker didn't really work out. I left the organization. I went to Saatchi & Saatchi Innovation Group and ran kind of an innovative web group and did that for a while. And lo and behold, the same person, Dave Collins, who called me initially to go to online, called me again and said, Steve, the dream is alive again. I'm at this new company called Communities.com. And they bought OnLive, and they bought the Palace, and they took the Palace, and they put ad banners on the top, and all of a sudden they're making money. Now, none of them know what Traveler is, and I'm not really here working on it, but they're willing to hire you to open up Traveler again. So I was quite nervous. I went there, and sure enough, one of the first things I did was say, okay, I'll do it. Now, you have to remember, OnLive didn't fall so well, so there was all these big backup tapes of very big servers that had the source code and all these worlds and the website of OnLive, and it was all kind of in shambles. In fact, Community.com actually bought the servers, and in fact, they were pillaging OnLive, meaning Community.com was just running in, stealing good computers, because now they owned OnLive and nobody else was there, and just hacking them to pieces and doing whatever they needed. So anyway, I came back, and my job was to open boxes and see what was going on with Traveler and try and get it started again. So one of the first amazing things for me happened, and this alludes to what Maxie had said, was I kind of got in Traveler, and everybody was still there. In other words, the community had never left. And in fact, it seemed to be more vibrant than it was while we were doing some of our work. And all these conventions showed up that I didn't know about, such as Turn Your Hip Side Down when no one's there and doing some form of dancing and a lot of other techniques. So I actually had to go back to the world I created and ask people where they thought they were and what they thought we were doing. And this was very much, at least to me, like an anthropologist. I kind of went to a community kind of with a notepad in my head and said, okay, what's going on here? And it was quite exciting to see that the community had never let it die. And it was quite amazing and quite lucky and one of the many close calls that Traveler had. This was an extremely close call. All someone needed to do was flip the switch on the server and it would have been gone. It just turns out the way that OnLive fell, no one turned off the server. And Communities.com didn't even know it was on for at one point. So OnLive went through one of its very sticky points. So when I got there, I thought I was going to have to, quote, turn it back on again. But I realized it got never turned off, and in fact, it was a whole community. I have related this story to the talks that I give in a different way, because when I got on, people said, oh, welcome back, Steve. They didn't even realize, in fact, that I had quit OnLive, that OnLive folded, that I worked at a whole other company for a year and a half, and that I, in fact, just took a new job at communities.com and flipped this thing, this client on for the first time. So they're going, when is the new build coming out? And I said, so I equate that to being a Star Trek episode, which is, You're on Star Trek. You could decide which one. I'll use the first version of Star Trek. And you go to a planet, and the planet is utterly destroyed. That this world of smart beings eventually had World War III and killed each other. And it was very sad. And you're walking around seeing if there's anything left over. And you notice these funny orbs. And everyone, there's Chekhov and gang, and we're looking at this orb, and someone touches the orb, and all of a sudden, wham, they zap inside the orb. And all of a sudden, they're in the orb, and the orb is a whole community. And you're kind of going, oh, wow, there's still a community here. And they're going, oh, you're the creator. When is the new build coming out? And yet, and I have to say, in those early days, I know Oz was surely around, there is no world anymore. There is no build. There is no code. I can't believe you're still alive. I hate to tell you, but OnLive is dead. They blew up. So it was a very amazing and exciting time, at least for me, to see that the community had never died and was still there. As I go on, does anyone have any questions about stuff like that?
No, I do have to comment on that, though. I was around during that time, and I remember a lot of people being scared. You know, we were going to lose this, and we weren't sure if it was going to, you know, survive it. And I do remember a few key figures in, you know, working to help keep it alive, Oz and Ozgate and Fast Eddie and his page. And I'm sure there's others, and forgive me for not remembering, but I remember, you know, a couple of people. Just a lot, and the rest of the community just being really concerned about, you know, the Traveler program.
Yes, and that's great. See, I wasn't there, so it's hard for me. I mean, I just opened it up one day, but I didn't make it through that time. So it's great that you give credit. And again, just like I didn't start Traveler, I just came to it from EA. I left it, so I cannot take any credit at all. I wasn't around. But two people on the OnLive side do have to get credit. And one of them is Dave Collins, because he never left OnLive. He just stayed there till there was, he was the only one, and he moved over. And he lied, cheated, and stole, so to speak, to actually make sure that the server didn't go down. So Dave Collins and J.M. Valera is another guy who kind of stayed around. So that was actually the second coming of OnLive at communities.com. And unfortunately, we were in the exact same boat, which was the company did not care or understand OnLive. They thought everything was the palace. Now, Oz has a comment, so let him get in one. So go ahead, Why don't you say something else?
Okay, the first thing I wanted to say is I wanted to respectfully disagree. The online server, the avatar server, I should say, did go down for quite some time. You guys, when you came back, you were able to flip it back on, I guess. But it went away, and we had no support from the infrastructure that was OnLive. You know, the avatar server, the destinations page, things like that. It was all gone, and we were distributing zip files full of avatars that would decompress into the correct directories. And, you know, to put the avatars there that they would normally have gotten from the avatar server. And so in that respect, it very much was us who kept Traveler alive. I just wanted to add that, you know, just to add a little more impetus to the fact that, you know, it was Travelers that were desperately trying to keep it from dying at that time.
And that's right. Now, I might have it wrong because I think of that event as the second death when communities.com died, that we did that. And only because I was a little bit more involved. But that also happened from OnLive to communities.
When OnLive died, that was the first death. And when communities died, that was the second, definitely. And the major contributing factor in both those instances was the fact that the major avatar server went away, and so that when people tried to log on, Traveler would naturally go and see if there was a new version of that avatar. That was his job. It would go and check file size, and if there was a new one, it would update, but if there wasn't, it would go on and let you in. And when the avatar server went away, it could no longer check to see if that avatar was there, and Traveler wouldn't run. It wouldn't start up. And a lot of people who didn't know how to replenish their avatars or turn off that search, they didn't know they could fix it, and they went away. They thought it was dead, and they never came back.
Yeah, we lost a lot of users.
Right. Yes, that's right. So the voice. So tell me if I have it right. What I'm thinking of is the voice server stayed up within our online complex, but the avatar server went down. Now, it only checks the aperture server, so one trick is you put all that in your cache. And if it's in your cache, you can get past that and at least then get on, and then you're back to the voice server again.
Exactly, and we put our cache setting right now.
That was the server called Platinum, which I told us the cliffhanger story this morning of pulling Platinum out of the rack and not having the password and then jam cracking it. And so Platinum was the loose wheel. You could still keep driving without it, but it was a real pain. And we finally replaced Platinum about a year ago by putting a whole new path into the client and building a whole new machine to replace that 7-year-old Solaris box.
So that's Bruce Dahmer talking there. He's talking about the second death when communities close, and Bruce came in and again, sorry, I always see it from this kind of distributed side as opposed to the community side. So there was a lot of community things going on there, like again, new zips. But Bruce really completely saved the day the second time. And it should be said that Bruce has saved the day for many communities, including Active Worlds and others. And that Bruce, from the OnLive employee point of view, came in because he was doing this book, and he came in through the marketing people, rarely told us that he existed. But eventually, when the connection was made, that he literally became the big brother of OnLive. He knew myself and Stasha and Dave, that it was his conferences that we were going to talk at, that him and I would do a lot of talks together and really discuss the future of things. So in a way, he was, you know, the management that we should have had. I should be careful about legal issues, but I want to tell one, and if you tell some of that story this morning, I'll let it go. But Communities was falling, and when Communities fell, there's lawyers all over the place. And I'm probably going to tell it differently than Bruce did. And I only want to get this one interesting part in. Bruce was actually trying to buy the assets. And to his credit, Bruce is one of the few individuals who's taken money out of his pocket. Well, we all have taken money out of our pocket. I'm sorry. They don't want to say that other people haven't for service. But he took serious money out of his pocket to actually officially buy some things, you know, to buy a non-exclusive for Traveler to keep it going. One of the interesting things was communities thought they were worth so much and they could sell Traveler for so much, just like on Live in the beginning, that they didn't really want to talk to anyone about it. And it turns out, and Bruce, you could always correct me here, that some of the regular folk at communities.com were given corporate credit cards, and with those corporate credit cards, they had bought things. And if the company went bankrupt, they would have been liable for those corporate credit cards. Just that's the way the law works. So one trick that just shows you how thin ice sometimes happen is, what they realize they can do by making a quick deal with Bruce is clean up that their debt. And then we had inside people willing to make this thing happen. So again, I think that's what kind of made this deal come through. Bruce, is that close? And should I be talking about this?
That's absolutely correct. And I'm not sure how this came up, but that was the lever that moved it. And just to give you guys the amount of drama involved, the day that we were there, and I explained this morning how we had to draw up all the legal documents because there was just no one was working with any sense there. We had to place it in front of them. We placed a contract in front of them that they had to sign as is, and no fudging. They were trying to fudge a whole bunch of things that actually broke the law, and I won't go beyond that. But then we said, this check is yours if you sign this contract and allow these people and sign these bills of sale for these machines. And these people who you know, who no longer work here, will come and take them out, and we will give you a certified copy of the assets that we have found so that we have a non-exclusive copy, because we did not want an exclusive copy. We wanted to transfer one complete clone of all the technology, but leaving the technology within communities, and that was the arrangement we made. And what I noticed, which was interesting, is they signed the contract, and we gave them the check, and then Dave Collins, JM, myself, and a couple other people went back to get the machines and verify everything. And I noticed somebody, a woman, running through the office with our check, grabbing her coat and heading for the door, and she was heading for the bank to deposit it so that they could make some kind of a payment. And we knew this. There was this motivation behind them, but we had no idea that how incredibly close they were. And literally, I think the deal was made on a Friday, and then on Tuesday they filed Chapter 7, not Chapter 11, Chapter 7, which is a total liquidation. So we had no idea that they were this close to the cliff edge.
And when we talk cliff edge, we're just talking about the fall of Troy, right? Just to be clear here, these are people who were in back rooms trying to figure out how they could salvage things, lawyers all over the place, machines getting sold and moved on the fly, and Bruce really having to kind of come in, make a deal with the emperor. And remember, this emperor is not unlike, the emperor of Troy. He's actually going to get hacked. In fact, he got hacked in 2 days. And, he basically said, hey, emperor, can I have, the stuff in the basement, and I'll move it and sign here and okay. And the emperor kept saying, as well as all the other people involved, we can't deal with you now. They're fighting at the gate. So there was a lot of, one of the things Bruce had to deal with was there was literally fights going on, which is, we can't talk to you, the lawyers are here today, and you're a little bit of money, and we can't do it. So a lot of it was persistence. If it actually was just someone saying, hey, I'll buy it, it wasn't like that at all. It was Bruce actually, okay, this would be a different analogy. There's fireballs coming over the wall of Troy. And the emperor just, every time there's a fireball, the emperor looks away at the fireball and says, hold that wall. And Bruce had to keep turning his head and saying, just listen to me once. I'm going to take the horses and that carriage, and you will get more collateral. What do you say? And then he'd lose them for a day or two because the next fireball is coming in. That's literally what was going on. So luckily, another time that we've made it through. Bruce, would you concur with some of that analogy?
Yeah, it was crazy. It was like dealing with going into an insane asylum and people shouting and tapes around machines. And I told them the story this morning of us literally with our Exodus rep and JM and community's former Exodus rep going into the cage at 3 o'clock in the morning and taking the platinum machine out of the cage, which we could not get through legal. And we took it and put it into our cage in the next building. Thank goodness we were Exodus customers or we'd have lost that server. And one of the things, guys, the night before we went in to try to do this final deal, it was something interesting. I went in to Traveler because I wasn't sure when Exodus was going to pull the cables out of the machines. And I went in, and there was a whole bunch of people on the night train. And that's a world I've always loved. And I started to approach the night train, and there were a lot of people on it. And you know, all the scenery is going past and everything. And I realized that, oh, my God, you know, at any moment, that cable, that RJ cable is going to get pulled out of the server, and this people are just going to, it's going to go black. I mean, the people are going to disappear, and this is the last night train. And I couldn't even go into the group of people. I felt so in a state of suspended animation and fear and hoping and kind of in the craziness of a crashing world. And I could not approach the people, and I just looked at them and I said, you know, I really hope this is not the last ride on the night train.
And unfortunately, that was quite standard for communities.com. They really didn't know what they had. One of the things, I'll go into a couple of anecdotes here. So they had the palace. How many people here know of the palace? Maybe you could just shout out. Yo.
I heard of it, don't have experience.
Yeah, it's a 2D system. It's a lot different to say. I don't think it's anywhere. It's just kind of so-so, like a million other ones. And one of their problems is that Traveler's kind of getting in the way. In other words, when we got someone big in, you know, what do you mean by that? Yahoo would come by, and large companies come by and say, what can you do for us, communities.com? I would show Traveler, and it was a problem because when I showed Traveler, the client loved it and didn't want to see anything else, but communities would always say, well, it doesn't really work, it's not really ready, and let's show you the palace again. And in the end, they were just lying and saying that, well, the communities.com, I mean, on live was simply the research of what palace can be. So if you buy the palace, you'll get research down the line. I mean, you know, you'd get on live down the line. So it was kind of a tricky place. But again, Dave and I and other people were there to try and keep Traveler alive. Now, I want to tell you some of the really interesting anecdotes that happened kind of in the building. So one of our biggest, now I'm back to on live themselves, one of our biggest openings was going to be with MTV. So I don't know how many of you remember it, but we worked out a deal with MTV. We made 3 MTV spaces. This guy, Kevin George, was the producer on it and was working on the design team, had a lot to do with it. Sasha made avatars, the whole gang. And we were going to go from this kind of beta test to the real world, our big kind of opening of On Live with MTV. And the trouble was, MTV was kind of walking all over us, and it had to be MTV, and you know, and they didn't really understand the world. But anyway, we did. It was a lot of fun. So I'll tell you a couple of cute stories. You know, in a way, at least for me, I'm an artist. As many of you space designers are, if you go to my site, you'll see that I have work in galleries, and I think of myself in some ways as an artist and then a scientist on a different side. But as an artist, it's quite strange with Traveler to build a piece of art and then have people enter that piece of art and in some ways become part of the artwork. And I have a talk on, you know, I talk to Purple Tear story. And I want to say that's just an anecdotal story. It's true of every one of you, how you're creating your art and living in it and how unusual that was. Well, here we are with our biggest job ever, which was MTV. And the way it worked with MTV is for one whole day, they were going to broadcast from Tumblr. So just think about how MTV does things. They have a VJ, a video DJ, right, who they have, they got a producer and a sound person and a camera on them, and they tape a week ahead of time, and they, that person basically just does stupid jokes and announces the next video. Where they did that, which is typical to them, they sometimes do it as a shoot, except the shoot was in Travelers, so they were sitting at a mic like you are, and had, and like some of you, they were just taping that video. So actually, it was 2 days before they were set to go, and I went into this world that we were building, and I was checking that it was coming along. And it was a closed world, so I thought, so there couldn't really be anything in it. And it's always a strange thing for space designers to go into a world, and you think it's local on your computer, and all of a sudden somebody shows up on the other end and starts talking to you, and for a while there you're thinking, this is kind of weird. Well, I did that, and the person came up to me and said, hey, this is a closed set, you have to leave. And I said, what? And he said, this is a closed set. You have to leave. We're filming here. And it was the standard MTV producer, with, and there were three avatars, the VJ, kind of the cameraman, and the producer all kind of trying to get it. And I thought it was the funniest thing, because I'm going, excuse me, I made you, and I made the voice that's coming out of your mouth, and I made this very room. So it's the first time, for me at least, one of my artworks was kind of snotty back to me. So another weird thing that happened in MTV was they did not want any kind of policing. So we had a system where we would have a technical support, and we told MTV for free, part of their deal, that we would have a technical support person in every room, 24 hours a day, ready to help people with microphones. And it was an issue because it was quite successful. You have to realize, for one entire day on TV, MTV was in Traveler. And they allowed us to have commercials that told us how you get onto mtv.com/onlive and get on. So there were hundreds of people every hour using Traveler for the first time, jumping on. One of the reasons they were jumping on is because they thought their MTV favorite DJs were live there at the moment, when in fact MTV tapes a week in advance. So everyone in the company, including me and everyone else, was doing what we call tech support, which was we'd be in there for an hour, and it was ridiculous. We'd have 20 people, 30 people in a room, well, 20 people usually. We'd have several rooms, and most of those people didn't have mics. Or if they had mics, they didn't. So we would do things like scream into the room, how many people can hear me? Step forward. And then we'd go, how many people have mics? Step forward still. And we called it like MASH triage, where we would just very rapidly try, because we knew some of these people had nothing to do with 3D, didn't ever care. So if we lost them in the next 5 minutes, we would never get them again. So that was fine. One of the problems was MTV would not let us use our kickoff policy. So our policy was that you had three shots and then we would ban you. And it's a very known technique that if somebody comes in for the first time and being very abusive, you simply go over to them, you say your name, you ask them their name, and they go from thinking that this is some weird video game to what I call a reputation system. That they have a reputation and you do, and if they ever want to come back and see Maxie again, and they kind of, you know, dissed her, that would be an issue. So one of the things Maxie, and all of you do as tricks, is you go over and say who you are. But MTV was very tricky. They didn't understand the world. They hardly ever came in, and they wouldn't let us ever kick anyone out. It was just their rule. So this became a problem because young kind of headbanger guys were coming in and going up to women and being extremely sexually abusive. So just to show you kind of a slice of life of what it was like working at OnLive, here I ran, at this point, a 20-person design team. So that was space builders, that was avatar builders. Now we had about two or three of each. It was a producer like Kevin George who produced MTV. We basically went down to L.A. and we met the MTV people. We went to the MTV Beach House. They showed us, they gave us designs, you know, so that was the fun that was going on. And we had sociologists thinking about socially how this would work. And just to show you that I always had very interesting problems, problems that I've never had at any other company, why I enjoyed being on live. Now, this was kind of a bad problem, but we realized that we were paying our tech support people to stay on live for 4 hours. So some of you still do this, right? So their job was, there wasn't very many people. Yeah, right, so you know it. So that meant you were in-world and you were waiting to help. Now, it got tricky with with MTV, because they would come in sometimes 10 at a time, and most of them were just brainless, and you didn't even have a mic. But they also, at the same time, had to check questions. So anyway, that was their required job. They had to do that. Online was paying them to do that. If for those 4 hours they constantly were getting sexually abused verbally, I finally had to go to the marketing group. And I remember I explained to you earlier that our marketing group wasn't always that good. And I said, look, you don't understand. We can't do this. You have to go talk to MTV and tell them to make better rules. I know you're scared to talk to them. They can't treat our people like this. So they wouldn't listen, and I finally said, okay, this is how it is now. There are real women who are running tech support who are getting sexually abused every day, and we're requiring to get sexually abused. So I'm going to tell them they have a sexual harassment suit against the company if you don't do that something about it. And I've talked to a lawyer, and it looks like they have a case. Does OnLive as a corporate company want to deal with this? And, of course, at that point, I was able to go and talk to MTV and change the rules. But it really does get into these issues that you guys all know about, is what's virtual and what isn't. MTV was thinking, oh, this is all virtual playland, as some of our marketing people were. And that's not it. These are real lives and real people. So I think if you're interested in some of that style, that you could look at some of the papers that I have on that. Does anyone have stories that maybe they want to mention about this issue of is it a game or is it real, and how this is real lives and real people and real love and real heat?
One of the things that I introduced is, after the experiences you had, I became a member of the Traveler community in the very beginning of 1996. And very shortly after, I was a member of the tech support staff on Olgate. And there, Dave had all kinds of rules. He had rules for this, rules for that, and rules for everything. And it seemed very oppressive to me, especially since I was one of the people who was supposed to enforce all these rules. When I opened Olgate, I narrowed it all down to one. You know, and these are all kinds of issues that either, you know, people wanted to be oppressive, like, you know, like in my opinion, Dave was, or, you know, your marketing people who, they didn't want to boot anybody. They wanted to see the population grow, as I did. So I narrowed it down to one rule, and that was no abuse. And that made it very easy for people to understand. You know, there's so many things that fall under abuse that, you know, and practical sense could carry them along. If they were smart enough to install the Traveler program, then they were smart enough to understand that one rule. And it really did a lot to help the community. And to this day, I still consider it the finest thing that I did for Traveler.
Yeah, it really did put in a reasonable policy. And I do want to give at least a credit to this guy, Dave Ortman, because there's only been so many people who've done servers. And even though, yeah, he had his rules that got out of hand, he kind of was the Osgate of his day, and he did try very hard. And, you know, we're all in this, and we all are passing this torch. So there's been several servers that have come and gone. You know, obviously, Oz has been around for the longest time, and he really has done amazing stuff over the years, and he's still here, so there's no... I don't have to spend too much time giving Oz credit, because I think we all know how good he is, and I sometimes want to give credit to the people who aren't here anymore. I have one other question, too, before I go on. Is anybody here, especially in the other room, who worked at OnLive? Because some of them said they're coming by tonight, and they might be here later, but I'm curious if anyone is here now. So that would be like Stasha, who made all the avatars, or James Grunke, who did all the sound, even devised some of the ways that sounds worked, Ali, Dave Collins, and other people. Is anybody here at the moment from OnLive?
And I also want to explain in here, Dave O is the owner of the Olgate server.
Yes, which isn't around anymore, as far as I know. And I still get really bad old jokes from him. He's in the room. Oh, great.
No, he was in, I don't know if he's in the second room there, but he was over on Travelers Network earlier when Bruce spoke. He came in. We had emailed him. I think he said he got your email, Bruce. Oh, he must be on the Digital Space News, email news.
So I do want to at least give some time to how Traveler was created. So I have a talk on my website, and I'm going to actually refer to it. So I actually have up in an...
Okay, that's you can, I think, access it through the portal up top and the link, Steve DiPaola. I believe that would be it. And if you do click on that link through the portal, it will shoot you off across the room, but you'll still remain in the room.
Okay, so if you want to do it, it's just DiPaola, DiPaola. .org. And if you go to that, so one of the things we claim we tried to do here that they didn't do in other worlds is natural metaphors, that we relied on using not computer-based metaphors, but more natural metaphors, like talking, and, yeah, somebody just broadcasted it. So if you go in there, you can go down to the Stanford Learning Lab talk that's there on the talks, and click on that link, and then subscribe. So, and you don't have to, there's nothing. Our goal was to design... So I got to close some stuff down here so I can see the talk. Our stuff is to was to design a community. And we had specific design goals. So our design goal was multi-user group communications to create a new kind of community. To do that, I like to say, so I'm on like a virtual community design model slide, the third slide, that most people have a goal in mind, and then they have technical issues. So in our case, our technical issues were, the speed of the computer, what to do on the internet at that day, and then the goal was the social interaction, which sometimes programmers don't always think about. Then you have aesthetics. You could choose the way that it would look. It doesn't have to look, and I deal all this time in my animation classes and when I was in the game world, where games just don't have to be looking like photorealistic, that in fact they could look in a particular way and you could have some kind of look and feel. So the one we were going for was less than a specific look and feel, and it had more to do with this natural metaphor, which is to make it very human. And like I said, I'm at a design school now, that still is very much I'm trying to make computers bend to you rather than the other way around. So how did we try and make it natural and human? We used the first-person point of view. We made it seem very immersive, that you were really there, and that there were real-world anchors to support that. So we decided the way to make a community was the structural process that creates a community is communication. And in fact, that community and communication both have the same Latin root, which is common. So to have something in common and to communicate to that to other people makes a community. Now you can see with that literally was the root idea of Traveler before we decided how you would do that. And now you can see when you talk about things like what they want to do at MTV, pulling away from a community experience and into some kind of, you know, game silly experience is some of the problems. And communities are all about people. So one of the things people knock about Traveler is it doesn't look as good, but everything was tried to put into what the person is, not the kind of the background. Now we're suffering to this day and age because we're still using a renderer that doesn't use accelerated graphics. If we had accelerated graphics, we could make it look as good as anyone else because it just uses, you know, basic Vermal, so it surely could look a lot better. But anyway, it was all about community. And we decided the number one way, because when we were thinking about how do we want to add this feature versus that feature, we'd always say, what's the most natural way to do it? So we decided the most natural way to do communication is with face-to-face voice communication. But that actually is better than typing, better than writing, better than other forms. So even though in 1994 that was going to be an issue because we're going to blow a lot of bandwidth on that voice, that we get tons of things out of it. One, it's the most natural form. Two, you get cues to your emotional state and the individual. And I often, whenever I show Traveler for the first time, what I always do is, and unfortunately I do it with some of you guys, is I say, see, based on her voice, you can tell she's very comfortable, or based on his voice, you can tell he's from the South. And do you see how she giggled just now? That shows off that she really feels that. It's not like typing in laugh out loud, which doesn't really mean laugh out loud. It often means I just dissed you. And because of it, I want to make you feel more friendly again. But I've done that. The Traveler isn't about that. And you can get all that through the voice. And people pick up on that very quickly. The other thing is, again, if you're reading my slides, it's extremely comfortable and natural. So we decided out of all the communication forms, we're going to be based on voice. And then we were going to wrap everything around voice. So voice comes out of the face. So we decided to do face before we... So I have a technical slide in here about how we did it, because at the time, it's still hard to do voice. It's still one of the only apps that does 3D spatial multi-participant voice that's disattenuated and stereo panned. And we bought all that as we compress on the fly, which was a real credit to some of the programs. And in fact, the guy who developed our voice came from Stanford and was quite a good guy. And to this day, we're still using some of code, although now we're using some more basic codecs. And Bruce Damer, as well as some of you guys out there, have been involved in making those codecs better and working with our companies. By that time, it was a spatial voice, and you can see my little chart here showing how that kind of worked. And basically, if people know technically exactly how it works, it uses, basically it worked on 19.6, is that what it was called? I don't even think in those terms anymore, but it was very simple dot bandwidth. And for that, you get one voice, and it was full duplex, which is basically where you can talk and hear people at the same time. Now, officially, you could talk and hear one person, but two talking at the same time, it will split that into two. So instead of getting like 16-bit, you'll get 8-bit and 8-bit for two voices. So the amazing thing about Traveler is you never get more than two voices coming down the channel and you get one up. But it does that every 60th of a second. So it's got a really smart system to kind of decide who's talking. Officially, though, you still shouldn't get that many voices. And this is a possible situation for, like, singing, because there's no break in the voice. You can imagine just talking, there's so much breaking. If you decide who's the most important to every 60th of a second, and you do that, you really can get a lot of voices in. But I have seen, and Bruce, you've seen too, as a lot of other you have, where there's people been chanting. Now, when you chant, you kind of go, oh, there's no break in the voice. And it seems like 20 people are chanting. And I've almost never seen the breakdown you should see given the way the technology works. Do people generally agree with that, Oz or Bruce or anybody? Kind of chime in on how the voice has worked over the years.
Well, physically, it's just like you said. You know, and I would try to stress that, you know, when people come in and study Traveler, you know, that, you know, you would only be able to hear the two closest people to you that are speaking, and not necessarily the two closest people to you, and things like that. It has worked very well from the perspective of, okay, we have, you know, a lot of rooms that have a microphone on the stick. It would serve as a focal point, and people would play music. And people could choose to either be right there and listen to the music, or they can choose to back off a little bit and listen to the talking and the music, or they can back off completely and just listen to the talking. And by having that focal point that people could choose, you know, to what degree they wish to listen to the music. And it all worked very well, I think.
Now, if there were some early design decisions, what happens if you want to play soccer, which means you'd be pretty far away from other people, would they be able to hear you? So the thought was early on, let's give you a button so you could turn your voice louder and softer. And again, I was kind of a Nazi there in that I was for what was humanly natural. So we use generally what works for regular voice. I didn't want to add some of these things, but I always wanted to get it work in the natural way first and build later rather than to have a mess. So we did the exact same thing with the way we looked at things. So I'm on to the next slide. Our main idea was to get a sense of telepresence. That's a sense that you're really there and you're there with others. So I think I'm quite excited that I believe it does work in that you do not feel like you're home on your mic, talking to people who are also home on their mic, and you're basically just looking at a picture that has, you know, that picks up the sound, that you feel like we're all in this space. I've referred to that often as buying the pair. The pair is the person at the computer, their avatar, that you feel they're in fact one and the same, and that gives you the sense of telepathy really there. A lot of these other sites, you really feel like there's this Neverland thing going on. You're chatting home, and while other people are seeing it, chatting at home, they're not specifically in the same place as you. This is why I was so sure that Talker would fail. How could you feel that you're on a web page? It doesn't make sense for that metaphor. I'm not saying there's other metaphors, and I think what Bruce has done with Talkspace, putting it in a different metaphor, sense, but this metaphor is specifically about thinking you're really there. So we did this, if you see my, you know, and I believe once you feel that you're really there, it breeds some kind of engagement. So I'm still involved with Traveler and academics where we're using it to, I have a project right now that is trying to teach third and fourth year medical students, so they're in their clinical years, so that means they're in hospitals. Now, here in British Columbia, most of the people in Canada live very close to the border, as Bruce can attest to, because he's from Victoria, and as Jeremy can attest to, because he's from Victoria. Well, when people go all the way up north, where it's quite cold, and you're a training doctor, you're all by yourself, but you try to learn more, so you need to put them in Traveler, where they can meet like-minded people. So because of the sense of engagement, very busy, they can really feel what it's like at the other hospitals and kind of deal with their issues. So I have this sense of engagement breeds community, which is what you guys are all about, collaboration, which is also what you guys are about, and learning, which has happened in different ways. The way we achieve that, I have 4 points here. An immersive first-person point of view. Now, you got to know a lot of other games don't do first person. You usually can get above a character. Now, we make it very hard, or we could hit a button, get above or behind. I just really push it that you have stereo hearing and you're in yourself and you're seeing other people like you. So there is this sense really being there works. So you have this human field of view, you have stereo hearing and distance attenuation. Now, unfortunately, I don't think we got the voice attenuation and how close you have to be perfect. So sometimes we meant to, we designed it. But I still think it's quite weird sometimes. There's these weird dead spots. We did simple 3D navigation. That means we went out of our way to use the arrow keys rather than the mouse because we wanted to achieve the sense that that it was one. In other words, when Bruce talks, I'll kind of move forward here, that I turn and look at him, and I don't even realize I'm turning. And when Maxie gets close to me, that I'll get close to her, or I'll pull back, or when there's an issue, and that you don't even realize you're turning when you turn. So you get into these really socially complex things. Now, if I explain that to people who don't know Trevor very well, I always say, well, let's just say your boss is next to you, and he's over here, and this other guy who wants the job is there. When my boss talks, I'll turn very rapidly to see him. And when this other guy, my rival, talks, I would turn right away because I hope that conversation will fall. But now if I don't, my boss will know that I am not turning. And so I have to turn. Well, this is this whole idea about just using the arrow keys. So, and some people, you know, Oz and Purple Tears are really good about doing this very good and smiling very good. And, you know, by the way, those are things I always look for in Traveler. Do people use it in complex way? This is why I used to fight against having chat here and having avatars that don't breathe and talk, because I, at least for me, I was trying to build this up even more. So if I can get in a little bit about the future Traveler, I was literally hired at Traveler not to run the design team, but to make better avatars, to have avatars that when I talk, that they just naturally move back and forth. And they naturally get angry based on things in the voice. And unfortunately, we got caught in so many technical issues that I didn't do that. And I actually decided, you know, the avatars are pretty good with such as the spaces in the early days. And I actually took over the design team and redid some of these other issues because the overall design was more important than making the avatars. But if you go to my site, you'll notice that I have a very significant effort in high-end faces that you can talk into a mic, and they will actually gesture, and you could kind of put something like heroicness on. And by the way, we just got voice over IP working, so we're talking with Bruce and others about the possibility of using this new type of avatar. We don't have spaces, we don't have multiple people, so I don't want to claim we have anything like Traveler, but there's a possibility if we go an open source Traveler that I could give my face work to it, and Dave Collins and people in the room here to give other things to it, and we can build it. So,
jumping in here, that definitely is a direction if we could somehow, working with Dave Collins and where he's got the coach actually link, is to look at creating a team that will take it forward. And it's a very important, I'm hoping it could be an outcome of this weekend, somehow we get this started.
You might need to adjust your mic.
Yeah, it was a little tricky hearing you, Bruce, but he basically talked about this is a theme that we really could get started in one possible way, even though it isn't Traveler, which is Traveler, it's starting to give some code bases in the different areas and have the Traveler group talk about it. So I could make it more obvious where the face stuff is, and you can look through it. Again, you're not talking to another face. You're only looking at one face, but it's some code base. I have a question on the side of
When I asked during the Q&A session earlier, and I hope I'm not destroying your flow by asking more questions, what you would do to improve travel. I actually have a couple of ideas on that.
Could you hold on 1 second? I just want to ask Dominic how long I have and if someone's going after me. The great points, and I want to do it. I just want to make sure we're doing it and not straighten up someone who's next, who's after us. So, Dominic, actually, when does the next speaker go?
Oh, we have Jeremy, or the gates are going at 7 p.m. Pacific time, so we still have an hour and a half.
Okay, good. So we're fine. So tell you what, if you could, Oz, let me finish off the talk, and then let's completely go, and I'll do it very rapidly in 5 minutes, and then let's go into the mode of how this community could make travel better. So could you hold those ideas? Is that all right?
Certainly.
Okay. So I'm just going to finish off the talk just because I want to, if we get into that mode, I don't want to come out of it. And I'm sorry, I'm all over the place. So I just wanted to get into the idea of why heads and why not heads. One of the ideas was, at the time, with the computer systems we have, we wanted to invest all our resources into communication, and that was the best play to do it at the time. It was always believed, as we got more resources, that we would then add bodies. But one of the problems I had is, how would we add bodies? Because with heads, you're fully in control of your head. You're talking through it. You're moving it. It's real. If you're a body, well, you know, the feet are moving, but you're not controlling the feet. So one of the things we actually thought we would do next is a hand. But we could never figure out, so you could open doors and you can sell out and you could do all those kinds of things. But it really was an obvious... Yeah, how to do that. And so we got blinking and breathing, lip sync and emotions, and movement over rendering. So when people say, well, traveling doesn't look that good, it was actually our belief, you know, and many of us had done animation for years and years and years, that movement is more important than rendering. That you very quickly buy what an icon is. If the icon doesn't move well, and I bring up a movie like Final Fantasy that looked great and moved awful, and in fact, I would say the exact same thing is true of a movie now. What movie has one of the greatest actors in it of all time is out there for Christmas and is doing miserably? Do people know? Yeah, Polar Express. And it's doing bad because they used motion capture. So they have this thing that looks just as beautiful as a book, but everyone thinks it moves horribly. So I think movement is also important. And you're not always seeing these avatars breathe, but in the initial avatars, there was a sense of breathing that was put into it. The point is you can't engage with a picture. So we could have made avatars look very good, but not feel real. And you can't, I don't think you can fall in love with a picture like what they had in the palace, but as we've kind of proved by several marriages in this world, you can fall in love with an avatar. So you guys know a lot about the spaces. I'll move on from the space thing. But it was thought of in the early days of Traveler that we don't need to make floors and walls, that it would be more, again, theme-based. They were crazy with themes. There would be a Star Trek theme and a this theme and a sports theme. And just so you know, when I made the first group of spaces, I didn't do them all in-house. I went out there and had some money from the marketing group to have other groups. So I would just draw these things out on napkins, and there was a number, and you could see there was a number of early groups that made these spaces. I did not, and my team didn't make all the original spaces. We designed them, but other people tended to make them, and even kind of the Aztec Utopia space, which is a great space, I actually... you know, said it should be open and airy, like, just so you know what I literally said, like a Greek, and I used Greek, not Aztec, like a Greek plaza where Socrates and Plato could talk up in the mountains. And then somebody else, this guy who hardly got any money from us, kind of made what was currently the Aztec space. Well, have you know that I had to go into a meeting in front of the CEO because I took money that was not approved by the marketing group, and I made Aztec. And they said, we don't understand. We told you to make a computer space and a sports space, and some of these other spaces, and you went off and made this Aztec space. Who's going to talk about Aztec stuff? And I said, I hate to keep telling you this, but it's not theme-based. And sure enough, Aztec, you know, this Utopia was a very, is obviously a very popular space, and it was just shows you that some of these early ideas kind of made sense, that people hang out, they don't chat, and hanging out above the world in this plaza is a good way to do it. Now I feel funny talking to you people about space making because you've made better spaces, but we actually had to do write a space thing. And you know, I could go on and on about group dynamics and how people form groups and all that happens, and we try to make that happen. But in the early days, my greatest joy coming into a world was seeing that people were forming groups of 3 to 6, and when the stories got uninteresting, they were going over to talk to other groups. That was some of the things we were trying to build. And I still talk to this a lot about how some of you play like volleyball in a gym, and you win the game, and you're all excited, and you're all talking to each other, how a conversation will break down very quickly because you're in this very big gym. Now, if you go over to the side of the gym and talk, the conversation won't break down as much. So space, from a conversational standpoint, is broken down into staging areas, and how these staging areas are how people like to speak. And cognitively, and a lot of my work now is on knowing how the brain works and trying to emulate that. Cognitively, you really, I mean, mansions are broken down into rooms, and rooms are broken down into in front of a space, behind the space. Now, so some of you don't make spaces like this, but I always think that socialness is the most important thing. So I do try and make spaces that do as stages. Now, here we have a physical stage, so it's quite obvious where to stand. But I like to have these rooms that aren't too big, and they have known staging areas and have more than one. So you keep trying to force people to have good conversation. So I'm going to say that one of the things we try to do is emulate a natural social process. And then in neuroscience, we know that your brain recognizes all these separate things and independently puts it together as a real world where you kind of go, oh, I know this. This is comfortable for me. And that traveler does this with facial animation, so you feel that there's real people, with voice attenuation. And I'm constantly saying that we get the cocktail party effect for free. So the cocktail party effect is a social phenomenon, not a computer phenomenon. So the cocktail party effect means in a party that you can drown, even though all these people are talking, if you want to hear what that woman or man across the room is saying, that your brain seems to know how to filter out everyone else. Well, we obviously could have wrote a program, just like we have ignore. We could have the opposite of ignore, which is you could click on someone and say, ignore everyone but who I am clicking on. But it seems like, and it's always scary talking to you guys because you know that it's not always true. But when I'm talking to a crowd of scientists, they don't know that it works sometimes, not every time. But anyway, it does seem like we get the cocktail party effect for free, which is there's a bunch of you talking that you can filter out other people. Why does that work? It's because we've emulated natural process, and your brain can do that normally. So it means we don't have to code all these things in, that by coding what is natural, all these other things happen. So whether that's falling in love or getting to a particular distance away from someone or stalking someone, a lot of this stuff comes for free. And that they're anchoring that they're, you know, I'm really, really big with my space designers on making tables, because I think, you know, when you look at how faces are made, and I do a lot of work with faces, while we live in a 3D environment, we live on a 2D plane on a 3D environment. So our eyes are on a plane, right? Even though we have two eyes, they're on the same exact plane on the, what I would call the Y plane, right? The left to right plane. They're doing that because we, as predators pretty much, in the evolution case, I looked at it that way, and our ears are on a plane. So we as humans are not really, wouldn't work very well in three space. And you guys know if you go into a room without a floor and everybody is sideways and upside down, it's uncomfortable. So I really believe in having a floor of playing because that's an anchor. And I believe in tables. I love tables because tables are another form of a floor plane, and they tell people where to stand. You know, so I tried to make this biz space, which is, you know, with that in mind, that you can make tables of different sizes for that. So some of this is trying to get at, and when my designers would make really good-looking tables, I would get mad at them. I'm going, it only needs to be good enough where it feels like it's a table. Any more work you're putting to make it better than a table is you should be putting into something else, because it's having these five or six or seven things together that make you feel, oh, I know what this is. This is normal life. And that's why you can talk and fall in love and all these things, because it feels like that. So that's kind of the end of my talk. I just wanted to get through it, and I want to stop because I want to get to all this more important stuff. But I at least wanted to give you guys a sense of when we design things, how we designed it. Now, I'm not saying it hasn't changed, and many people in this room have one-upped it in many ways, but that's where it goes. And I'm often asked to talk to Yahoo, or I, literally with my new face system, we were talking to America Online, and I can't, and I talked to Bruce and I at Cigarettes 2 years ago, we're talking to the people from there and the people from Second Life, and it just, and Bruce and I spent a lot of time talking to people from Adobe, and Dave Collins works at Adobe, and he was talking to them, how often people made the same mistakes over and over again, because they don't get that it's about the people, stupid, not about, like, oh, well, we have radiosity, or we have this better technology. I'm not against making things look better, and I'm not making against things look like beautiful art. I'm just saying it should be about people first, and you backtrack that in. So, and the last slide of my talk says, hey, it's kind of working, because people are doing things in socially complex.
No.
Oh, sorry. They're using, thank you. It's always amazing that I forget how things work. Using things in socially complex ways, and they hang out rather than chat. So it's more about hanging out on the back porch. It's more about being a tribe. I cannot tell you how my greatest pride is that that's what the system is, and isn't about BS chat, that is about real people hanging out and getting to know each other. And when people always would say, oh, you're that voice system, I go, well, we're more than the voice system, because other people keep adding voice and it still doesn't work. We're the human system. So I contend that the greatest part of Traveler is the pause when there is no voice. When you say something and it's kind of deep and somebody stops before they say something back, that there's huge meaning in that pause, and you feel it. You feel it inside. You go, ooh, I got them. Now, obviously, nothingness in computers is pretty bad, but in Traveler, it seems to mean something. So it's the glance, the pause, the acknowledgement, head turn, that I think I'm more excited about, you know, than these other things. Because you feel other people, and you feel what passes unsaid. And I'm reading from my last slide here. So that's what the computer is usually awful about, the human. And I'm excited that this one is more about the human. You never, in all these other systems, you're always looking at the text. You're always looking at the billboard in the back of the room. Here, in fact, you're worried about stalkers and falling in love and all these other things, because it's, and all these Shakespearean things in terms of, like, Romeo and Juliet, because it is so real. Okay, so I think I want to stop there and get into more of a general conversation. Before, though, as we get into how we can make travel better, why don't we first yak about what I just said. Do people buy this kind of humanistic thing, and do you have anything to kind of add about how that works?
I do. Instead of body language, you have avatar language. You know, you were talking about how you turn to people and, you know, the pause and the avatar's still moving. You still have the visual.
Yeah, and that's why I like that it's easy to move the... By the way, once when Traveler, when OnLive was really big and everybody was coming in and we thought we owned the world, and all these people would come in trying to say, do you want to use VR systems? And we go, it has to be a system that people would want to use. So we weren't really, one of the things we were trying to, this was, I forget his idea what it was, but it was a squeezable mouse. So imagine in travel if you were using the mouse, and as one of the things we liked about the idea of a squeezable mouse is you don't realize if you're angry that you're squeezing it, you're just squeezing it. So then when you're talking, we could have you talk like more up and down and more strange because you don't realize it, but you're squeezing the mouse as you're holding on to it. This was some of the idea, again, very different than the laugh out loud and how chat works, which is you don't even realize you're doing it. In other words, it's one-to-one. How you feel is what's happening instantly rather than you saying, oh, I'm feeling a certain way. And that's why, in my opinion, those four icons or five icons on the top of the screen that do happy, mad, sad, we're a complete and utter failure in Traveler. It's nice that they're in there. I'm just saying they're not used because you have to go over and click them and you have to hit a key and they're very discreet and they don't fall with natural flow. And it's too bad we haven't figured out another way of doing it. Anybody else want to chime in?
Oh, the whole sense that you were talking about, the sense of a tribe, of hanging out, I mean, that is... Traveler has developed that. There will be many times that we will all be together, not saying a word, absolutely not saying a word. We're all doing something else, but it's the sense that we are actually here. We're not alone. We're hanging out with our friends. There are times we don't need to talk. We feel like we are actually physically somewhere, not at our computer. There's many times I spend hours in Traveler, and I don't think that I am by myself in my computer room. I'm in Traveler. I'm in an actual space with people. I mean, it's very, very convincing to the resounding success.
So when we talk about ways to make it better, there's many ways to make it better, and I'm not the only person thinking about that, but obviously I personally would be more excited on ways that we make that part of it better. And there, unfortunately, some of that does involve constraints, like not putting in other things. Now, I did want to talk about this idea of the tribe. The tribe has been good and bad. It's mainly been good, but it does bring out a lot of infighting, and you're on my server versus your server. I swear, you know, I don't come in this world all the time over the years. So, like, when I could never grok Worldwide Party. A lot of you are probably from Worldwide Party. But a lot of times I'd go into Worldwide Party, there would be, like, a lot of people, like around 10 people, be forming this perfect circle, and no one would be saying anything. And I'd always be trying to think of, are they text chatting? Are they all taking drugs? I mean, what are they doing? You know, and occasionally there'd be music playing. And so some of it is funny because it's so personal that sometimes it was hard for me. Now, I have to give, Bruce obviously is someone who brings people together, but there's no one better than Oz for someone who's dealt with the issues around my server versus your server. When I came back to communities, I had huge problems of trying to put order back. And in the end, of course, I didn't put any order back because people thought I was taking it away from them. And I surely had kind of the bolder guys really upset with me, saying things were censorship and all this other stuff. And I have to admit, Oz has been someone who's constantly been really good about, and I know there are many probably people in the audience who would disagree with this, and they would disagree with it because of how gossipy and real human Traveler is. So everyone kind of hates and loves people with different points of view. But I think Oz has been really good about doing that. And I often call him the mayor. In other words, when I'm trying to rapidly explain this to a group of educators like I had the other day, I kind of very quickly give you all kind of, you know, ideas just so they can get the idea social. And I do call Oz the mayor, which he just cares about his world, you know, and he's Oz of Ozgate and Ozgate and Oz, he's the mayor of Oz, and you know, and how he'll help you, but he doesn't want to diss his world too, and he wants to care about his people. And so Oz, did you want, if you're still around, did you want to speak to this balancing act between humans being gossipy and not in my server and not in your server and hiding from each other and kicking each other out and and making these forums where people used to like say awful things about each other, and how that's part of the human nature that makes it good as well?
I think it's always going to be around. As long as humans are, and as much as this caters to the human condition, I think that will always be true. And we try to avoid it. You know, we try to say, you know, hey, we don't want to subscribe to, you know, gossip. We don't want the, you know, the drama like they have in Yahoo and stuff like that over here. But there's always going to be some. And because this is so first person, because it's so very human, it's about humans. It's not about, you know, all these other topics they hit upon when they try to sit outside of the box and study it analytically. It is very much about the humans, and so there's always going to be some of that. Go ahead, buddy.
Not hearing anything. Are we still talking?
Yeah.
Yeah, Bill's talking.
I think there are real solutions to some of these problems that have shown up, you know, since travel. The one I'm really big on is what I call a reputation system. And Bruce knows a lot about reputation systems. He speaks to it. And I think one thing I would like to, in the next version of Traveler, is put in some kind of reputation system. Now, I don't like putting anything that's forced, but I like to put in things that people realize it's there and it's so easy to use. So one of the things is a reputation system means, in the real world, we have reputation systems. People know us. We've done good things in the past. In travel, we have reputation systems, but because people come and go, it takes a while to build it up. And one of the biggest problems is, how do you deal with people who are idiots before they build up their reputation system? So there are techniques, you know, on all these Friendster kind of technologies out there to kind of work with kind of some level of reputation system. Bruce, do you have any comments with kind of that level? Ligia?
As far as reputation, yeah, I mean, Travelers suffers from and benefits from...
I'd just be afraid that somebody would try to be too good to get too good of a reputation. I mean, you want people to be themselves, right?
Cameron, do you see Bruce, and can you hear Bruce?
I didn't hear him, no.
Okay, so let's talk first, and then let's get Cameron talk afterwards. So, Maxie, it seems like they can hear both of you, so why don't you tell Bruce to go first?
Yes, I'm going to tell Bruce to go first. And Hammer, if you can't hear Bruce, you might want to re-enter and cash him in. Everybody else hear Bruce okay?
I can hear him.
Yeah.
Okay.
I had to change spaces now and then to hear him.
10-4.
Okay, so let's do it where Bruce goes first and then you go. So, Bruce, did you want to finish?
Okay. I'm sorry about the technical problems. I think what we see with Traveler is you see kind of the pluses and minuses of a community that has a reputation system. The pluses are that you can really trust that you go into a space, you don't have a lot of strangers that don't know each other and don't, you know, are going to be abusive or dismissive or just not have anything to say. The minuses are, and I've heard this several times, that people come into Traveler and they do feel like it's a cocktail party, and unless they're quite adventurous socially, or they luck out and they meet the right person who's very welcoming or whatever, they find it a little hard to break in. And of course, with any community worth being a part of, the community does apply its filters, and you can almost feel them. It's this, as Steve says, it's the thing that's unspoken. And so it's always a balancing act of, you know, how big do you want your community to grow anyway? But it is valuable to get that new contributing member. And my dream for Traveler is that we wouldn't have 3 or 4 or 5 servers with active communities. We'd have several hundred, and that those servers may not have more than, you know, 30, 40, 50, or 100 regulars, and maybe no more than 20 or so or 30 people on them at one time, but that we have more a propagation of communities. So if we can kind of figure out a model when we look at what should we do technically with Traveler, what would you also do socially, socio-technically, to help grow and propagate the communities. And despite how kind of simplistic the palace was, it was so easy for somebody who wanted to set up their own server and their own room, and then people would come in. So it propagated virally. And there were some really good experiments, really good, you know, several hundred good Traveler palace communities. So I would propose that the discussion on where to go with Traveler is how to understand success and limitations of our model socially and technology, and see if we can get just a few more servers going, so that at Travatars 2005 we might have 5 or 6 servers that are going.
Okay, now, who was the other, I didn't catch the name, the other person who wanted to speak
Hammer?
On the reputation issue?
Hammer, do you have something to say about the reputation?
I'm just, what do you mean, we would have stars or something that would come up on our profile, or how would we do, how are you suggesting to do this?
As in celebrities?
There's systems out there for doing it. So, you know, I don't want to bog us down in it, but there's a way to do it. You know, I'm going to slide into future things for Traveler. So maybe I'm going to go from reputation system over to, like, new features that Oz is talking about. So, Oz, if you don't mind, I'm going to just slide into it, which is what I think. One of the things we came up with when we were at least at communities rethinking this. Can people hear me, by the way?
Yes.
Yes. Sure.
Okay, yeah, I'm not seeing the numbers. Is that Traveler was fine and not the issue. What the issue was an infrastructure system. An infrastructure system that did all the things. Traveler, as good as it is temporary. While it's about real people, it's about it dies when the people aren't there. So the thought was a better web system that has a newspaper that says what people did. So it could have a story on Oz 1 week. It could have a story on Dominic 1 week. If you didn't make it to this event, you could see it later. And a sense of time, that an event happened once, and that time is important. So you can say, during a particular time, this happened. So you can know something heroic happened or something special happened. And you actually build some of the reputation system there. And then the other thing you would do is you would, rather than having thousands of worlds that people could go into, because there's so many spaces, that you would set up a newbie space that maybe somebody was always in, and a different time space, and you would work. All this is about community building. It has nothing to do with making spaces. It has everything to do with kind of being how to produce it. And I still believe that getting the source code and putting in new features, we need to do that. But I do believe if we wanted to get 100 people in here all the time, that we could build it up. And most of the ways we would build that up is using web-based technology, in kind of constraining to certain rooms when you first come in, and having a lot of links from those rooms to the web-based technologies. This is what they did at the palace.
You know, imagine a tool where if somebody wanted to have an event, whatever it is, speed racing, sing-alongs, that you could always go to an event page and see what that is. Now, everyone's going to tell me, we've done this. And I know we have, but we never seem to keep it going. So one of the things is how to do it in a way that one person isn't doing it and believes in it and the rest of us don't, but in a way that we're all comfortable with using bulletin boards or wikis or whatever. I still think that the greatest feature that we need to get into Traveler we can do without a new code base, and that's simply trying to show newbies what the community is, trying to show people that one day a week is always going to be a lot of people. I mean, one of the things we did with ABC is what we learned from MTV is we can't have 24/7 popularity. What is the most important time that we want to say there's always going to be people here? So you know on your Saturday night, that's a good night to come. And that's what they do. Like when the Fox Network came out, they had crap on except for their Saturday night programming, which they had something like The Simpsons on. And then when that went successful, they started doing another day. So they, you know, I think we could benefit from some of these community tricks. Again, it's like a real community. Real communities have gossip columns, they have newspapers, they have calendars of where an event might be. So I have a feeling, you know, that's one approach. So when we maybe go into this thinking of how we can keep this going, maybe we should do two things at once. One is, what are new features and ways to get, so let's put it into two pieces. One is how we can grow to the community, and one of them is how we can grow the software. So let's do both of them at the same time, but let's not do one versus the other. Let's constantly move back and forth. So Bruce brought up on some ideas about how to make Traveler's 2005 good, and I kind of was talking about other things, and Oz wants to talk about features, and I'd like to talk about features too. So why don't we go, because he's been waiting, why don't we go to Oz next, where he does talk about features, but everyone else think about features and tricks to grow the community, and a way for everybody in this room to not forget this event, but use this event as a catalyst to do other things. So Oz, you want to talk now?